We
are.
We
are.
We are cultivate.
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 We are cultivate.
Hello and welcome to Yield Crime, where we discuss the funny, strange, and obscure crimes of yesteryear. I'm your host, Lindsay Valenti, and joining me today is not my sister and co-host, Maddie Stangle, but one of my very good friends, Emily, from Pineapple Pizza Podcast and Drink Drunk Dead.
Hey.
Welcome back, Emily.
Thanks. It's been a long time.
I know. It's been a hot second since I've had you on the show.
I think it's been since The Flaming Sheep.
Yes, The Flaming Sheep. That has been quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done our own thing, but yeah. Yeah, it's been quite some time. So Maddie can't be here today. She is neck deep in packing and moving to her new place. So Emily has graciously agreed to step in to be my co-host for this episode.
You're welcome.
Before we start, I want to again acknowledge our listener, Carrie Ann, who is our research assistant now for the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she helps out with pulling a bunch of source materials for me, so then I don't have to scour the internet looking for resources, and then I can just jump in and write, and here we are. So thank you, Carrie Ann, once again, for your assistance with this episode. And on that note, today we will be discussing the Colfax Massacre.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
I picked the right one to just jump in on.
I was like, I told you it was going to be bad before we even started. I was like, So.
No long pig, though, right?
No long pig, I promise. Information was pulled from the following sources: a 2024 Free Speech Center article by John R. Vile, 2023 NBC News article by Claretta Bellamy, 2023 Smithsonian Magazine article by Danny Lewis, 2020 Daily Kos article by Denise Oliver Velez, yep, Bill of Rights Institute article by Julie Silverbrook, Britannica, Colfax Memorial, History Channel, United States Senate article, and Wikipedia. And links to all of these articles will be included in the show notes. Got something you want to say? Shoot us an email over at yieldcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story ideas, see any gifts you send our way, or if you just want to say hello. We're pretty friendly. Speaking of friendly, if you'd like to have real-time conversations with us, consider joining our Discord over at the Cultivate Network. You can chat with us over at the Old Crimers Cubby, or catch up with any of the other great creators that are part of the Cultivate family of podcasts. Just click the link in our show notes, or over on our link tree to get started today. This week's episode comes just a week after the 151st anniversary of one of the deadliest post-U.S. Civil War attacks of the Reconstruction era.
Oh, I think I know what this is going to be.
Yeah.
You said it was going to make me mad. Now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For those who are unfamiliar with the term, quote, "The Reconstruction era was a period in United States history following the American Civil War, dominated by the legal, social, and political challenges of abolishing slavery and reintegrating the former Confederate States of America into the United States," end quote. This period in history lasted from December of 1863 to the end of March of 1877, so quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the event we'll be discussing comes towards the end of the Reconstruction era. During this time, several white leaders, as well as freed African Americans who were sympathetic to the cause of racial equality, were elected to different areas of the government in the South. So for reference, the ratification of the 15th Amendment of the Constitution took place on February 3rd, 1870, which granted all male citizens, regardless of ethnicity or prior slave status, the right to vote.
Males.
I mean, we'll come much later. It's yeah. Fine. Women voting? What?
So, I mean, considering it was only 5 years after the end of the war.
Yeah.
It's still,
yeah.
They moved decently fast on that.
Yeah.
considering how slow we move on other things.
Well, and considering how torn the country was at the time to be able to get it ratified.
Many white Southerners who were butthurt about the Confederate loss during the Civil War were looking for ways to reinstate white supremacy within the different seats of government. This led to intimidation tactics by groups like the Ku Klux Klan, who were formed in Pulaski, Tennessee in 1865, to prevent black voters from casting their votes. And it got to the point that federal troops had to be stationed throughout the South to protect the integrity of elections.
Oh, yeah. I think that was Grant that ended up having to send a whole bunch of troops down, and then people got real mad at him for that.
Yep. And that gets brought up a little bit later. Yeah. To give you a snapshot of how bad things were, during the 1868 election, the KKK were responsible for more than 2,000 politically motivated murders in Kansas, 2,000, and the deaths of 1,000 freed people in Louisiana.
Oh my God. Just in Kansas and Louisiana?
Yes.
Boy, where was it? Where were they founded? Was it Kentucky, Tennessee, Pulaski?
It was in Pulaski, Tennessee.
Yeah, I bet they're really not proud of that.
I don't think I'd be advertising that anywhere.
Yeah, that's not, no billboards.
In response to this increase in aggression, the Enforcement Acts of 1870 and 1871 were put into place to prohibit the congregation of individuals with the express purpose of disrupting an election. It also granted the government the authority to mobilize troops to protect African Americans and their right to vote. So, in February of 1871, the Second Force Act, or it was called the First Anti-Ku Klux Klan Act.
Really? Wait.
Yeah.
Is that one of the official names for it?
That was one of the, like, sub-names of it, yeah. It was Anti-Ku Klux Klan Act, yeah. So the Second Force Act placed elections under the authority of the federal government, allowing federal judges and U.S. marshals to supervise polling locations.
I bet after a war that was all about states' rights, those states were even more pissed off when the federal government said, we're going to take over all of the elections.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then in April of 1871, so just a few months later, the Third Force Act granted the president the power to call up the army or suspend habeas corpus to ensure equal protection for African Americans.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really, really pissed off people down south.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned earlier about Grant, in Louisiana, the 1872 gubernatorial election led to a bout of violence on a local level for the people of Colfax. The election was between Republican William Kellogg and Democrat John McHenry. In response to President Ulysses S. Grant sending down federal troops to support Kellogg, the White League was formed. A heavily armed insurgent paramilitary group.
Wow. You know what? This feels weirdly familiar. Feels like something we've, I don't know, recently experienced.
It's weird how history has this way of repeating itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's gross.
It's really gross, yeah. On April 5th, 1873, racial tensions in Louisiana boiled over with the killing of Jesse McKinney. Avery Hamilton, a descendant of Jesse, discussed the attack in a 2023 NBC News article. Quote, there was a band of whites, 10 to 15, rode up on my great-great-great-grandfather who was on his farm, mending his fences. And they rode up on him without a word or warning and just shot him. And his wife and their children witnessed this. End quote.
It would have to be terrifying just to exist. What do you do? Where do you go? You can't. There's nothing that you can do. It's never going to be right.
And it was around this time that rumors started to spread in the area that the black residents of Colfax were intending to riot. Because, of course.
It's okay when we do it. It's not okay when they do it.
Yeah. Falling on the heels of the senseless murder of Jesse McKinney, the black residents of town sought refuge together at the Grant Parish Courthouse, which was currently under the control of an all-black militia in an effort to protect the regional government from insurgents. So the election had recently taken place, and for whatever reason, in Grant Parish, it was like an even split between the white vote and the black vote. So the black people of Colfax were like, we need to protect these votes. We need to make sure that no one comes in and tries to like rig this election, because something's going to happen if we don't protect it.
Right. That's reasonable.
Because other parishes around them were getting attacked by these white supremacist groups. With that in mind, the black people of Colfax had dug trenches around the courthouse to protect it. Jeez. And had begun running drills to keep alert.
That's intense. They were scary. They were that prepared to protect their vote.
Yep. On Sunday, April 13th, 1873, a group of over 150, with some counts as high as 300, armed white supremacists, including ex-Confederates, the KKK, and members of the White League, attacked the courthouse, which was guarded by a largely black militia. This attack would go on to be known as the Easter Massacre, or Colfax Massacre, the bloodiest one-day event of Reconstruction. The African Americans, armed with whatever weapons they owned or could hastily improvise, did not have the proper amount of ammunition to effectively combat against the men who had come to attack them. The insurgents allowed the women and children to evacuate the courthouse, so they gave them like 30 minutes to get out of there, with the attack itself starting around noon. The freedmen held their own for the first 2 hours, but the mob had brought with them a small cannon, which they then fired into the courthouse.
Jesus. Okay. I know this is really serious. It's a really serious thing, but when you say a small cannon, I just picture like one of those cartoony little ones that they roll up and there's like a string that you pull on the back and it just kind of goes pop.
Yeah, I read small cannon and I was like, so what's a small
cannon? Yeah, that's a good question. Like, what qualifies as small?
Because, I mean, they're heavy regardless of what size they are. Is this like a 2-ox cannon? Is this like a 4-ox cannon? Like, how big is this cannon? And I couldn't really find out.
Was it just sitting in somebody's backyard? Where did they get this thing?
Yeah, where was this? Because this is a small town, so I don't know where, like, the nearest armory would be. You know what I mean? Where they could have been like, hey, we're just going to bring this cannon with us. It's fine.
Have you ever seen Sweet Home Alabama?
Yes.
Yep. You remember the crazy old guy that uses the cannon to shoot anvils? That's going to be the little thing that I have to picture here, because I know it's going to get really sad, so I just have to go back to the crazy old kook shooting anvils at the house. Out of a cannon. Yep.
Following the explosion, they set fire to the courthouse itself, where many retreating black men had taken refuge.
So there's no escape.
Well, a lot of them, when they came out, when the black citizens dropped their weapons to surrender to the mob, many were leaving the courthouse waving like white cloths or pieces of paper. And even still, they and dozens of others would find themselves mown down by bullets, chased, captured, and some of them were even hanged.
So there wasn't an escape.
No. According to the Colfax Memorial website, quote, several bodies showed signs of repeated stabbing and beating. Later that evening, the white supremacists marched dozens of their remaining disarmed black prisoners into fields near the courthouse and shot them in the head at close range, end quote.
For a vote.
Yep. By the time all was said and done, more than 60 African Americans who had occupied the courthouse were murdered, with estimates anywhere from 60 to 150 dead, while only 3 white men had been killed in the conflict.
But we're worried about the black people rioting, right?
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that are posing the threat in this situation, clearly. Yes.
The disparity in numbers comes from the fact that many bodies were thrown into the nearby Red River, and others have been taken home by their families for burial. So that's why there's no real solid count.
Yeah. It makes sense that families would want to get those bodies out of there as quickly as possible, because who knows, after everything that had happened,
what else people would do to them.
So disrespected.
On April 14th, Louisiana's Republican governor, William Kellogg, dispatched troops to reestablish order in the area. The dead were out for 2 days until state and federal investigators arrived from New Orleans, when they had the dead buried in a mass grave around the courthouse, where they are still buried today.
So they weren't even given to the families? Nothing was done for the families?
The ones that didn't come and claim their dead, no.
I wonder if they were too scared to come and claim them.
I mean, I would be.
Just beat it out of town after that.
Yeah, especially if I had been one of the women or children that was kind of told to leave. Like, you'd be terrified to go back.
Yeah.
In the words of historian Eric Fauner, quote, "The bloodiest single instance of racial carnage in the Reconstruction era, the Colfax Massacre, taught many lessons, including the lengths to which some opponents of Reconstruction would go to regain their accustomed authority. Among blacks in Louisiana, the incident was long remembered as proof that in any large confrontation, they stood at a fatal disadvantage," end quote. Following the attack, U.S. Attorney James Beckwith stepped up, risking his life and his career, to see that the men who led the murderous charge at Colfax be brought to justice in a court of law. 97 white men were initially indicted for their roles in the massacre, with only 9 of those being charged for violating the Enforcement Act of 1870.
Sounds right.
Specifically, the section that prohibits individuals from conspiring to withhold another citizen their constitutional rights.
Only 9 of them.
Only 9 of the 97, yeah.
Of the 97 that were charged, and how many were there to begin with? Didn't you say something like 150 to 300?
Yep.
Yeah.
So those are just the 97 they were able to find and capture. Yep. Of those 9 individuals, only 3 of those would be convicted by a jury in June 1874.
Let me guess, the jury was all white?
The 3 in question included Bill Cruikshank, James Hadnot, and a man named Irwin. I couldn't find his first name.
I was going to say, how much money do you want to bet that with all those people going to trial, 97 indicted, 9 go to trial, only 3 end up convicted. Those 3 were the people that others in the town said, hey, we don't really like you, so we're just going to throw you to the dogs here to appease.
I think these 3 in particular, I know 2 of them for sure, were the most vocal about their involvement in everything.
Oh, bunch of dummy braggarts, huh?
Yeah. There wouldn't have been much of a way for them to be like, I didn't say that, when a lot of people heard them say, yeah, we're going to do this thing, and they were proud of it. So then the case was brought before the Supreme Court.
Oh, goody. How did this end?
So the case, which is known as United States versus Cruikshank, resulted in all 3 having their convictions reversed on March 27th, 1876.
Sounds right.
Chief Justice Morrison Waite stated of the ruling that, quote, all Americans were citizens of both the United States and the state in which they lived, with each government being responsible for a distinctly different set of rights, end quote. So, in one fell swoop, the Supreme Court essentially stated that the 14th and 15th Amendments were merely a common courtesy guideline, at best, unless the state felt like enforcing it.
But they're federal laws.
Yep.
So, doesn't federal trump state? Well,
I think.
Yeah, it should, right? Because still technically it's illegal to grow or own marijuana, even though states have passed laws to make it legal. The federal government still says it's illegal to do it.
Mm-hmm. Huh. So with that in mind, it's no wonder that in the election that year, an unprecedented amount of racially motivated voter fraud took place, particularly in the South, where freed black men were either threatened with violence or, in the case of the illiterate, tricked into voting for Democratic candidate Samuel Tilden.
That's just mean.
Yeah, so they had on the candidate they wanted them to vote for, they had a silhouette of Abraham Lincoln. So they would think they were voting for Republican, but instead they were voting for Democrat.
That's so messed up. That's tricky. That's sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Also, false advertising.
Meanwhile, the Supreme Court ruling encouraged the creation and growth of white supremacist factions. In May of 1874, the first chapter of the White League paramilitary group was formed in Louisiana, with it spreading to other southern states, with Red Shirts forming soon after in South Carolina and Mississippi. Essentially the same thing with a different name.
Mm-hmm. Because they're so creative and original. Mm-hmm. White, red.
Yeah. According to the Colfax Memorial website, quote, no one ever received punishment for the Colfax Massacre. Some of those responsible went on to prominence in business, the professions, or government, end quote.
Yeah, that's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still see that today.
Yeah.
We see that happening all the time.
It's okay. You're rich and white. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, right.
As if the Colfax massacre wasn't horrific enough, a half century later, a monument for the quote-unquote heroes of the Colfax massacre was unveiled at the city cemetery. The monument was created to honor the white men, quote, who fell in the Colfax riot fighting for white supremacy, end quote.
Burn it to the ground. Turn it into rubble. Smash it into smithereens.
This isn't the only racist marker in the city.
Oh my god.
The second was installed by the Louisiana Department of Commerce and Industry.
Oh, so the state itself. That's great. The state. Yeah. Government. Yeah, fantastic.
In 1950, describing the massacre as a quote-unquote riot. And it read in full, quote, Colfax riot. On this site occurred the Colfax riot, in which 3 white men and 150 Negroes were slain. This event, on April 13, 1873, marked the end of carpetbag misrule in the South, end quote.
Oh, vomitous. Oh, God, it's so self-righteous. It's such... I don't think I have the right words.
I know.
To describe the feeling. 3 white people, 150 Negroes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those poor... white people, those poor white defenseless men who sacrificed their lives to protect you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It should be noted that Colfax is actually quite small, with a population in 2020 of just under 1,500 people, with 61% of that population being African American.
I wonder what their population was like back then, the size.
I know. I'd be curious to know how big it was.
I mean... just having 450 people. So it was 150 to 300 white men that went down there, right? And it was potentially 150 African Americans.
Mm-hmm. And that's not even the full population. Right. So yeah. The area where this town is used to be a plantation. So I don't know how many people were still living in that area at the time. That's all I know about it, is that it used to be either in full or partially part of a plantation.
Makes sense.
Thankfully, the marker was torn down in May of 2021.
It only took 71 years. That's disgusting. Right? That's disgusting.
Yeah. And replaced on April 13th, 2023, with a 7-foot granite monument on the 150th anniversary of the massacre. The monument lists the names of 57 Black people who had been identified in the mass killing, as well as 36 who had been wounded. It also features artwork by Jasmine Lee Johnson, a Black visual artist, depicting the Black experience during the Reconstruction era. And I'm going to read the names of those who were killed. And these are 57 that they can have confirmed were killed during this massacre. James Boswell, Forda Hunter, Captain Parker, Jesse Bonner, Matthew Irwin, Lank Pittman, Tony Booker, Warren Jenkins, William Rax, James Bounce, Eli Johnson, Eli Randolph, Barney Brandon, Elias Johnson, John Randolph, Mac Brown, Levin Johnson, Moore Reed, Warren Bullard, Shadrick Johnson, Ole Rubin, John Carter, Frank Jones, Cleesian Toby Shelton, Bully Ellis, Adam Kimball, Jack Simmons, Meredith Elzey, Cuffy Lanes, Kit Smith, Etienne Elzey, Henry Matthews, Archiel Smith, Charles Emery, Henry McCall, Alexander Tillman, Tom Foster, William McCall, Jerry Washington, Charles Gaines, Isaac McCullen, Adam White, Henry Hall, James Morris, Cuffy White, John Hall, Jack Neely, October White, Jack Hazewell, Guimo Nelson, Shaq White, Phil Harris, Kendare Nelson, Dundee Wilkins, Sam Howard, Louise Palmer, and William Williams. And the following are those who were wounded. John Adams, Dan Gordon, Flem Peters, Benjamin Brim, Kay Irons, Richard Reed, William Brown, Martin Johns, Sam Smorthy, Luis Baptiste, Robert Johnson, Harry Spotsford, Edward Clark, Claudius McCoy, Mole Sutter, Moses Clark, Daniel McCollum, Henry Taylor, Jesse Curry, Joe McPheel, Curry Webb, Henderson Dean, Sam McKinley, Matcham White, Baptiste Elsie, Baptiste Mills, Ephraim Wilkins, Charles Field, Alabama Mitchell, Charles Williams, Frank Forster, Levi Nelson, Flam Williams, Woodbury Gabriel, Gilbert Noble, and Henry Williams.
I'm surprised that the population is 61% African American today. Consider, I mean, if you think about other sundown towns all across the South, that was not the only place that this happened. It happened all over the South. Mm-hmm. And those towns, some of them never recovered.
If you go on the Colfax Memorial website that is in the show notes, the men that commissioned the monument, one of them is the great-great-great-grandson of the man that was shot at his farm.
Right.
And the other is a descendant of one of the people who took part in the massacre.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's a big deal.
So they wanted to work together to tell the story the way it's supposed to be told. Like, make it historically accurate telling of this event that people have tried to, like, push under the rug and pretend it didn't really happen. Mm-hmm. Or they whitewashed it to make it more like, literally, oh, these three people died. They're more important than the other ones. So I thought that was really great that the two of them decided to work together to tell the story appropriately.
It's really sad that it took 150 years for that to happen.
Yep.
For people to come together like that.
Well, and we're still seeing that all over the place.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Where people are just now being like, yeah, we were really shitty. Maybe we shouldn't be shitty to other people. This one event had far-reaching effects for people in Louisiana specifically, but it was also, kind of like I mentioned, one of the more gruesome attacks against freed African Americans within the South.
I bet this colored a lot of the laws, the Jim Crow laws that ended up being passed, because they could pass all kinds of stuff now with the Supreme Court being like, yeah, it's more like guidelines anyway, right?
Yep. The Supreme Court ruling really kind of was a bit of a slap in the face. Like, yeah, we made these acts, but it's really up to the state to decide if it's worth pursuing or not.
Right. So every state that didn't care for the black vote was going to do everything in their power to ensure that they couldn't, from incarcerating them for simple things, to making sure they didn't have polling stations, to making sure they simply couldn't know who they were voting for.
Yep. I just find it very interesting because Louisiana would go on to become the first Southern state that elected a black lieutenant governor.
Mm-hmm.
And we covered him last year, James Dunn. And so it was very interesting for me to, like, research this and just be like, oh yeah, this is where James Dunn was elected. And that was a big deal. So it's on the both ends of the spectrum. It's like it saw this horrific thing happen in this state, but then it also made great strides in equality. And by all intents and purposes, even though he had this rich white guy competing against him to try and, you know, kick him out of office, he was the better fit for the job, and people knew that, and they elected him, and he actually did really great things. So I thought that was pretty cool. Callback.
Well played.
So that's the Colfax Massacre. Fun times.
That's awful. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But it's good to learn about. I don't think I'd ever heard about that one before.
Yep.
Looking for more content? You can find us online at yieldcrimepodcast.com. If you'd like to see pictures from this week's episode, not to mention bonus content and funny memes, make sure to follow us on Twitter at yieldcrimepod and on Facebook and Instagram at yieldcrimepodcast. On TikTok? Of course you are. Follow us at yieldcrimepodcast.
Hello, Twisted Humans. Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cult, or haunting?
Then this is the podcast for you.
In 1952, there was a record high of UFOs reported. 1,500 sightings.
There has been evidence of human sacrifice, devil worship, and it is haunted by more spirits than can be counted.
A family of two adults and two kids reportedly saw a giant flying thing with glowing red eyes.
And meanwhile, the family's nanny that helped Veronica to care for her and Lucian's children was found bludgeoned to death in the basement of their family home.
I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is Twisted and Uncorked.
Well, on that note, this month's podcast plug is the Twisted and Uncorked podcast from Victoria, British Columbia in Cincinnati, Ohio. Alicia and Sierra have a twisted fascination with the dark, spooky, and unimaginable. Every Tuesday, they rotate through categories such as conspiracy, cult, disappeared, haunted, murderless, serial killer, unsolved, and listener suggested. And we will have a link to their show in the show notes. And I don't have any listener questions this week. So what is something good you'd like to share?
Something good. Well, I got engaged.
I know. I'm so happy for you.
I know it's not news for you, but for everybody else who hasn't caught up with me since like episode 10,
it's been 3 long years since they've last heard from you.
Hi, guys.
I know. That's so exciting.
It is. We're very excited. There's no wedding anytime soon because we're broke as fuck.
I feel that. I feel that.
But I got the ring, so hey.
So hey, it's gonna happen sometime.
Also, we get to see each other soon, so I'm very excited about that.
I know, it's like a little over a month away we get to see each other.
I'm so excited.
Oh my god, I have so many fun things planned. Like, we don't have to do them all, but I have like all these fun ideas of things we can do when you and Alex get here, and I'm just like, I can't wait.
Is ghost hunting somewhere on the list?
Yes, we are doing a haunted tour of the Wabasha Caves in St. Paul. And I was going to see if I could find another walking tour that maybe we could do the Friday you guys get here. So yeah, I will try to find some more stuff that we can do. But we are for sure doing the Wabasha Caves tour.
Ghosty stuff. You don't get to cover ghosty stuff on here too often, so.
I know. Typically it's like in October, I try to sprinkle it in whenever I can.
What's something good you want to share?
I finally completed assembling my RC car that...
Sorry, that's not what I expected.
I know, right? I know. So I think it was like last month, Thomas picked up 2 RC kits mm-hmm. where you are literally assembling the RC car from scratch.
That's a lot of fun, though.
Is it, though? Because it really tested our marriage. It really tested our marriage a little bit. Because there were definitely parts when I was building the engine where I was like, I fucking hate this. And I'm never doing this again. Because there was literally probably 200 screws to assemble this thing. And they're all different sizes. And if you put something in the wrong way, it doesn't work quite right, and it was a hot mess, but it's done, and we went to one of the places that I thought we could go when you come. It's called Glacial Pothole Interstate State Park.
What a name.
Right? But it's right off of the river, and it's a bunch of these natural potholes that were made by the glaciers. And
oh, okay.
It's really cool. There's a lot of fun trails, and so we brought the RCs to see if they could, like, go up some of the rocks and stuff. And when we first got there, there was this family with, like, 3 young boys that as soon as they saw the cars, they were like, oh my god, those are so cool. I kind of showed them the car and, like, the inside of the car and how it all works, and, like, the dad came over and he was like, that's so cool. And I was like, don't buy a kit that you assemble yourself because you will hate everything. And I let the kids kind of like watch, like it zoom around and stuff. And they thought that was pretty cool. So that was kind of fun that other people thought it was cool and not just me.
Boy, he was really betting high on your patience and your focus.
Yeah, he joked before we went out on Saturday. He's like, I felt very much like Doctor Strange in the movie where he's like looking at all the different like scenarios to see when they can beat Thanos. And he's like, it's only in one universe that it works. And he was like, I felt like in all the other universes, you were going to divorce me. He's like, I'm glad to see that we're in the one where you don't. And I said, there were definitely times when I wanted to chuck it out the window and be like, fuck, this sucks.
Could you imagine the divorce papers? What was the cause? The screws.
In RC car. That was the cause of our divorce. They'd be like, what?
Until you put it, just drop it on their desk and then they'll understand.
Yeah. I'll be like, imagine building this from scratch. Oh, now I understand. On that note, I'm going to shut her down.
If you want a playlist of all our episodes on YouTube, click the link in our show notes or in our link tree and subscribe today for not only a list of our full catalog, but a separate list as well, just of our Can You Crack the Cramp Word segments.
A great way to support the show, if you want to help out, but you can't do so financially, is to leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Good Pods, Podcast Addict, and or Audible.
If you're interested in ad-free content, consider supporting us with a one-time donation either over on Buy Me a Coffee or our Venmo page, both of which are in our link tree and in the show notes.
And on that note, as always, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Emily.
And we'll see you next time with another tale
as old as crime.